That the time is 11:13. Today is Tuesday, the 18th, April 18th. We have Representative Guerra, Representative Gatto, Lynn, and myself, Chair Newman. Today we're going to be hearing a couple of presentations. One of them is a presentation from the whole village project. This has to do with an electronic form of delivering education, so that we have a little bit of time to make sure we get everything done today. We'd also like to hear HB 228 if we get time. I don't know if we're going to how much public testimony we're going to be able to get in today, but we'll do everything that we can to accommodate. So let's get started with this. For the presenters of this program, please come forward. State your name and affiliation. Please have a seat.
Carrie Boyd, and I'm the director of Valleyesca Worldwide, which is a not-for-profit organization formed by the Yukon Koyukuk School District. And today, excuse me.
Maybe.
So much for technology.
We did have this.
And for the record, Representatives Wilson, Thomas, and Salmon have been excused for today's meeting.
And today we're going to talk to you about our project, which will include the eight elements that we feel are the necessary components for a healthy village: safety, health, education, economic development, social services, culture, government, and education. Today, however, we'll primarily be focusing on education and economic development.
Can you back up one slide? It said entertainment in the last one, and you said it. I think you said education.
We'll be focusing primarily. Oh.
Sorry.
Please proceed.
The intent of our project is to integrate K-12 instruction for Alaskan youth to include entrepreneurship, e-commerce, culture, and community learning strategies for rural villages. And I'd like to read a quote to you that is the foundation of what we believe will essentially create a healthy village from the beginning. Planting seeds of entrepreneurship must begin early enough in a child's primary education to establish entrepreneurship as a lifelong choice. And that is basically the foundation of our project. We're focusing on education for at-risk Native youth. We're using proven ILP processes, which is an individual learning plan. Rural economic development, which Frank Odez will share with you later, on early development of entrepreneurial skills, using the enhanced junior achievement model. Preservation of Native culture, providing options for village life. We feel it's essential to preserve what the Native villages have in place without disrupting that. And content delivery networking, cost-effectively disseminating content to villages using the most innovative technology today. And I'd like to introduce you to the staff members with the team with the expertise to bring this together. Alaska Worldwide is who I work for, and we are the host of the project. With Worldwide Idea, we have Jim Foster, and he'll talk a little bit about himself and his background. With the Alaska Association of School Boards, we have Carl Rose. He'll be talking about digital learning. We have Frank Odez with Lone Eagle Consulting. He'll be talking about rural economic development. And we have Fletcher Brown of TAMSCO, who'll be talking about the solutions we need for technology today. We've also have supporters in our project, which is Eric Downey. And I'd like to go ahead and get started with you, if you could, in essence of time, to talk about what you're going to. Thank you.
I'm Eric Downey, the Business Development Manager with the Alaska Manufacturing Extension Partnership. Chair Newman, Vice Chair Gatto, and committee members, thanks very much for managing your time to include this important subject with the other important and pressing and urgent challenges and issues that you guys face. We appreciate those as well. The Alaska Manufacturing Extension Partnership is a statewide organization that promotes economic development by doing fee-based business consulting services with existing manufacturers. About half our mission is rural economic development, focusing on e-commerce and entrepreneurship through the sale of native art. Art is a manufacturing product that brings cash into communities while strengthening culture and building esteem. So what's a business consultant, a telecom guy, a TV guy, and an internet empowerment guy doing with a bunch of educators? Well, we're all working together toward healthy and sustainable communities, whether it's in safety, health, education, economic development, governance, culture, social services, and entertainment. And education is the foundation of all of this. The entrepreneurship is an important skill, and it depends on educated kids. It's a mindset that needs to be fostered in primary grades, cultivated in secondary grades through programs like Junior Achievement and e-commerce, and it needs to be modeled in adult life to continue with prospering as individuals and as communities. Entrepreneurship works in India, China, Ireland, other places around the world that are coming up on us as competitively because they have educated kids. If Alaska wants to participate in this new digital economy as part of our flattening earth, we need smart kids. Right now, we are raising our first generation of digital Alaskans, and it's up to us to figure out where they sit on the competitive agenda with all these other countries. Thank you very much, and I'll turn it back to Dan Etulain.
Thank you, Eric. I'm Dr. Dan Etulain from Sitka. I have had many years now in the educational field, about 30 years of education, mostly in administration of higher education. And then I switched into television, have television stations here in Juneau and in Sitka, and in the process of acquiring a license to have a station in Anchorage with a focus of kind of a hometown TV, mostly rural Alaska, because you can broadcast now via the internet or by satellite. I have the two TV stations. Those are my livelihood, but my passion is to have a rural television license. I have videotaped in many villages across the state and have broadcast them on ARCS or RATNET or some other organization where you are familiar with. So I have my interest is to have a strong educational and entrepreneurship on the TV station, along with several other things. A series you saw of eight different kinds of things that the project is looking at. Television can be very supportive of that, and I want to be part of that program. So I hope to be able to do this as the project takes root and is a very viable kind of educational and training program. Thank you.
Chairman Newman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Foster, and I was retired assistant superintendent for the Galena City School District and worked for the school district in the middle to 90s through the 2003 school year. But currently, right now, I'm chairman of the board for the Worldwide Idea, and it's a nonprofit corporation. My primary responsibility when I was at Galena was to develop and implement a school improvement model. When I got there in the 90s, we had extremely low test scores. And it was just simply unacceptable, and we had to do something different. There were four major parts that we took a look at. Hold on just a second. Don't get too far ahead of me. One was that our school improvement model had to be collaborative. We needed, and we got support for the things that we did from our village, or from our elders, from our school board, from our teachers, from our administrators. We knew that we had to be successful. Failure was simply not an option. Our test scores were so far down that we had to do something different, and we must be successful. Whatever we did, we knew we wanted it to be replicable. In other words, if we could do it in Galena, could we do it someplace else? If I just did it at the city school, we also opened a regional, at that time, boarding school, and we needed to be able to be successful with those kids. And the last thing that it needed to be was sustainable. Our effort had to be sustainable in our absence. And Jim Smith, the current superintendent at Galena, has carried on and probably done some things to improve the model that currently exists. But the test scores remain consistent, even though I've had no dealing with it since 2003. There were two paradigm shifts that we looked at. One is that we knew that we had to train teachers to teach differently. And the second thing is that we needed to create an environment where students can be successful. We knew that if we continued to do things in the same ways that we continued that they'd be done in the past, we'd get the same results. And the results that we were getting weren't getting the achievement that we needed. The next slide shows you a village in 2003 that with similar demographics in our area and their test scores. Now this is after we've implemented our school improvement model for a number of years. You can see that this village was 87.5% below or not proficient in reading, 68.8% below or not proficient in writing, 75% below or not proficient in math. The same test scores for the Galena City School showed that we were 90.9% advanced or proficient in reading, 81.8% advanced or proficient in writing, and 75% advanced or proficient in math. Our test scores were again similar to the underachieving schools in the area and the state when we started this project, and we had significant and I think profound turnaround in those test scores. When you can look at just the graphs of the two schools, Galena's being in the advanced and proficient in reading, and you can see the changes that take place there. We also had, in the next slide, and it shows, you know, the regional learning center that's at Galena now, and these test scores show where our students were at on standards-based assessments in ninth grade of 2005. This is it shows where the kids that come to that regional learning center, they're 9 through 12, it's a boarding school. They live there predominantly from Alaska Natives, and their test scores when they arrive are from the 50th percentile in reading, and the math test scores are at about the 25th percentile. If those kids stay with that program for 4 years, look at the change in terms of how they do on the high school qualifying exam. You know, 90% of the kids, over 90% of the kids are successful in reading, writing, and math on the high school qualifying exam. And what it indicates to us is that the things that were the improvement, the model that we've established, if kids stay with it when they graduate, they are going to be successful. The next slide talks about focusing on the problems. You know, schools are failing. Low standardized test scores, especially at Galena, were simply unacceptable. Federal takeover does not address the root of the problems and most likely will not continue to lead to failure. And we believe that solutions do exist. And one of the things that we did that I think had a huge impact on what we were trying to do is we developed an individual learning plan for each student. We felt that if kids could, if it was important for students that were special ed to have an opportunity to, or gifted kids have an individual learning plan, then we needed one for our students in this program, and that it must be tied to state standards. We needed to teach our kids to be able to be successful on high-stakes exams. And the last slide talks again about solutions and things that we would like you to consider, and that's the development of an individual model or individual learning plan model for Alaska to replicate success and to be able to track kids and I appreciate your time, and I'm going to step back.
Jim, Representative Gatto had a question.
Yeah, I just need to get it straight. I guess I'm going to go back a ways. You were comparing Galena City with Galena, the other Galena?
No, there was it was comparing Galena City school districts in 2003 with another village school that had similar scores when we first started to show you that their test scores remained low and our test scores went up.
Now, I think you were going back to the 90s when, 93 was it?
No, I got there in 97.
Okay, in 97 the base was operational?
In
the military base?
No.
Wasn't?
No.
Oh, so you didn't have students that were military kids and
no.
You just had Galena kids?
Yeah. The Galena City School District is about 85% Alaska Native. 87% somewhere. The percentage would vary, but it was predominantly, you know, Alaska Native kids.
And their reading proficiency, you know, I think most things are based on the ability to read. Did they have a better reading proficiency in some other language?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know that the only other language that was spoken there was by the elders, and it was Athabascan. Our children, we taught, you know, tried to teach Athabascan language to the kids in the school, but I don't think that they were proficient, and they certainly couldn't read. I don't know that there's even a written, books and stuff on it.
Representative Lynn.
Yes, thank you. I'm enjoying your presentation. I'm intrigued by the concept of the individual learning plan for each student, which is very similar to the IEP, or individual education plan for special ed kids. But I know, as a former special ed teacher myself, this is an awful lot of paperwork that's done. And sometimes it would seem that they almost run off on at Kinko's. You know, they're not that different in the real world out there. And might we have the same problem with the individual learning plan for each student? So basically, everybody in school then, from special ed to the children we're talking about here, would have these individual plans. And how does that relate to just the plan for the classroom? Don't you have a curriculum that's developed, curriculum development? And how well do you measure against that development, what the kids are supposed to be learning? As a teacher, I hate all this paperwork stuff.
So did I. So one of the things that we've done, especially in worldwide, because they said that we need to be able to replicate what we do. We work with a school district in Idaho right now, and have designed a web-based individual student learning plan that's stored electronically, that's easily manipulated, that we can sit back and collect data off of. And it's designed to sit back. It must be designed in a way that it that doesn't hinder the educational process, and it doesn't hinder the time, the efforts that a teacher needs to make in the classroom. Teachers need to focus their attention on finding the right materials matched to the standards that are important for kids to learn, and not be spending the preponderance of their time doing paperwork. And that with electronics, you can do it differently. Had we had time, or if you would like to, we could show you, easily show you how that works, that process works. We had it built into here, but we knew that we were afraid that we wouldn't be able to show you everything, and we can't talk about everything that we did, but we can certainly show you the success that we had and continue to have.
It takes about 3 minutes to pull it up.
And I beg your pardon?
It takes about 3 minutes to pull up the electronic version to show you.
Yeah.
Just one quick follow-up. Whatever happened to report cards? How well are you doing your multiplication table? How well are you learning history? All the are report cards out the window now, and everybody's gone and all individualized? I remember when I first got into teaching, we had sort of an individualized reading program where no two kids in the classroom had the same book they were reading out of, and it was chaos.
I agree with you. Are report cards out the window? I don't know that report cards are out the window. One of the things that we looked at was we sat back and said, can we focus on the solution instead of the problem? You have kids that are dropouts, and that has one kind of a connotation to it, okay? It sits back and tells me that maybe the kid, it was the student's fault that they're not learning. If they should have been doing more, that if we turn that coin over on the other side and look at it as, are they force outs? Not a dropout, but force out. We know that research tells us that giving kids grades of D's and F's do not motivate kids to learn. And yet we give those grades over and over and over again to all kinds of kids. We sit back and give kids, promote kids from one grade to the next, and have a student that's got in the first grade, gets a 60% right for the year. And what do we do with them? We move them to the second grade with a 40% learning gap. Then to the second grade, we promote kids that had 60% or a D average to the third grade, and they got another 40% learning gap compounded. By the time kids get into the eighth grade, they don't, or high school, they are just forced out. They have no success. We changed how we looked at those kids.
We need to stay on task here where we're going, and hopefully some of these questions will be answered by some of the further presenters. I think this is a build-up or a lead into where we're finally going here.
Yes, I think next up is Frank Odaz, but I would like to comment on Representative Lynn's question. And I am not an educator. I'm a technologist, but I have seen in detail what these people have developed, and it is demonstrable today, if you would want it, in terms of being able to look at all the state standards, build an individual learning plan for each student, track their progress on it, and their concept is you don't necessarily graduate from the eighth grade. You can work 2 years behind or 2 years ahead, but you're not done until you have met every state standard that there is.
And you can speak to Representative Lynn later.
Thank you.
Carl?
Chairman, I'm not Frank Odaz.
No, you're not. You're my good friend, Carl Rose.
Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I'm very pleased to come out here and offer a component to the presentation today. Before you have a document, it's a schematic of the Consortium for Digital Learning. This on one page covers the presentation that I made to you about 3 weeks ago. Hopefully, it'll answer some of the concerns. What we at the association are doing is we're trying to build a delivery system, a comprehensive delivery system that's systemic. And that's what this is before you. You know, in the past, we have had some attempts in fact, in all of our school districts, we have technology. There's been no systemic effort to put technology into our schools. And that's what this represents. As a consortium, we're seeking a $5 million contribution from schools that are willing to enter the consortium, to be matched up against a $5 million capital request from the legislature, to be matched up against a $5 million request that's in the hopper with Senator Stevens. That's $15 million. We're looking at about 21 schools. A school would consist of about 10 classrooms with 25 students and 25 users, so 275 technology users. This is only for the purpose of being able to calculate what costs might be. What we're finding is that there are three areas of costs that are going to vary. A school's readiness for technology, if they're at the low range, at the moderate range, or at the high range of readiness, a large difference in terms of what the cost is going to be because of technical assistance and professional development and an infrastructure to support the hardware. So what you see before you here is an effort to introduce not just hardware. It's to take a look at a community, to get them into a discussion about how technology will serve them, to take a look at what the needs are with regard to technical assistance and professional development, and we are creating a market. This initiative will bring technology into our schools that will connect, create a market that much of what you're going to hear here today are all components of that market. If you have a delivery system, the question then becomes, what are you going to access to be able to serve your kids? And I think that's what they're talking about here today. I know my time is short, and I know you folks are busy. I had a chance to make a presentation to you. The discussions are ongoing now. I've been in touch with some of the members of the Finance Committee, and we're hoping to get some funding this year. What this spells out to you is that the consortium, AASB, we will be the ones who will be providing the transparency and the accountability for identifying those schools who are ready, because we really cannot miss. We got to find some success in our schools so that future years of funding will be secured. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will defer. Carl, if you have any questions.
Carl? Yes. Now that you, I know I had talked to you earlier about this just for the sake of everybody here. Your program, the Alaska Association of School Boards, want to work in association with this program we're being presented today to try and develop new delivery systems throughout Alaska?
We are developing a delivery system, and I think everyone here is going to be able to access this. I think what you're going to hear here is the content that that will be delivered through the delivery system.
Thank you, Carl.
The world is changing fast.
Name and affiliation.
The name is Frank Odaz, Lone Eagle Consulting, Dillon, Montana. I'm an educator. I've been working with rural, remote, and indigenous learners online since 1988 when I created the Big Sky Telegraph, which was one of the first rural online educational systems in the country. The Big Sky Telegraph connected 100 one-room schools all across Montana from 88 to 98. It was one of the landmark rural connectivity systems, and I presented, I traveled about 50,000 miles a year for a full decade, presenting all around the country. I now live in a very rural location with high-speed wireless, and I provided the first internet workshops for the Yukon-Koyukuk Regional School District starting in 1997. I've been teaching online classes for Alaska Pacific University to Alaskan educators since 1998. When I go to the villages, I generally start with preschool kids and work my way up to the elders. We do digital art, digital music, digital photography, and today it would be in an entrepreneurial context, such as with Lewis and his ecotourism business Mushing in Koyukuk. He desires a web presence. The traditions and values of the ancestors are in a position to be championed by the first digital generation, the youth in Alaskan villages. These fourth graders in Koyukuk 3 years ago were putting Athabaskan language on the web in an instructional context and created a community web page in a single afternoon. Since their teacher left, though, there's been far less use of digital technology in that village. But the potential is that worldwide we have technologies that can allow us to bring the very best resources to the villages. And this is an elder with her information on a laptop, her digital histories, literally, which I'll show you in just a second. I was in Hooper Bay just a week ago. These are kids with high-speed internet. This is the mayor of Hooper Bay, William Nanning, talking with passion about his vision for the use of broadband in the village. They had an eBay workshop where everyone learned how to post their art and crafts on the internet for global distribution. And this is just briefly a picture of a $100 laptop that has just been produced by MIT. They're looking at the global potential worldwide for educational mediums that will motivate people in remote and indigenous villages in particular. And I'd like to give a very brief demonstration of a flipbook software program that I believe would be instantly motivating in most communities. This is the history of Koyukuk. And basically, Elder Eliza Jones and I spent 4 hours together, and she narrated 150 photographs, and we were able to load it onto a computer and literally...
This is Eliza Jones, an elder of Koyukuk, author of the following digital story.
We're identifying photographs that were on Julie and Julie E.'s photo album from the 60s.
And the point of demonstrating this tool is that this is something that would allow anyone to become a digital author very, very easily. And I'll just play one more sample.
In, historically, the wolverine, all the animals, when all the animals were people, the wolverine was one of the honored chiefs. And so whenever someone catches a wolverine in a trap, it's a big deal. And so when they're coming home, they say, "Don't knock the horse, the chief is coming." And people get excited. And
sorry, I hit the button there, ended that a bit prematurely. The point is that with internet access, kids are able to cut and paste information in multimedia formats from global sources and literally create their own flipbooks with content from the web, such as this one, which is just a quick sample. This, as a learning object, can be sent via email, can be downloaded through the web, can even contain interactive routines like quizzes where you can then take the quiz and then see the results there at the end. The reality here is in times of change, learners inherit the earth, and Alaska has a long history of survivability based on learning what is required. I'm going to be presenting for a rural conference in British Columbia this Friday for a project that has been linking rural communities with the internet for a full decade. I'll also be presenting next Tuesday for an international economic summit focused on indigenous broadband applications. There are 1 billion people on the internet. This is a world picture of the world at night. And there are 6 billion more people coming online. And what this means is that there are opportunities for us gathering the very best broadband applications from all around the world. And the best broadband application for Alaskans, in a sense, is self-actualization, helping each learner of all ages maximize their full collective potential for learning, innovation, and collaboration. The issue here is we're limited only by our imaginations, and that can be a severe limitation if people haven't been made comfortable with what the broadband applications are. The internet has unleashed a global explosion of entrepreneurial creativity, and for 23 countries I'll be presenting that the very best potential indigenous broadband application is to help us all keep up to the same instant of progress on the latest indigenous internet innovations as they occur worldwide. The issue of broadband applications in education is that it's defined by communities and individuals based on what they've learned about broadband applications elsewhere. And my Alaskan teachers for the last 8 years have been telling me that they receive very little support, and it's a real struggle to use technology in the classroom due to the lack of the systemic support that Carl Rose was talking about. I'm here today courtesy of the Alaska Manufacturing Extension Partnership, which has an e-Raven e-commerce portal. Raven stands for Rural Alaskan Village E-Commerce Network. This is supported by the Alaska Department of Commerce. 18 village e-commerce centers have been created in the past year. 24 more are planned this next fall. We are all engaging in participatory research to identify the best e-commerce support systems for these villages, the best combination of educational and economic entrepreneurial activities that can start with primary level kids and progress up through the elders and so forth. We're partnering with the Alaska Native Arts Foundation to create sustainable village economies through global e-marketing of Alaska Native Art. AMEP and the Alaska Native Arts Foundation has over 722 artists already signed up, has achieved some very significant gains, as you can see. And we're working with an Alaska Village Sustainability Action Plan, represented by Alyeska Worldwide, assuring educational success for Native youth through effective online K-12 instruction matched to standards, and youth entrepreneurship and entry-level e-commerce matched to technology standards, and culturally appropriate community learning with multi-generational digital storytelling. The key Alaskan governmental policy challenges are that we need to move from the politics of control to the politics of transparency, where there's full accountability on genuine outcomes as a result of internet and its use in education. The authenticity of citizen participation and community buy-in is fundamental. We need to motivate all potential innovators and entrepreneurs and be efficiently gathering and sharing the best e-commerce success stories, mentoring expertise, fast-track training resources with all citizens on an ongoing basis. The need for continual reinvention and innovation sharing represents a new dynamic that has education at its very heart. Broadband without a plan over the past decade has proven to be a problem. Build it and they will come has proved to be a field of dreams. And I'd like to basically end with the thought of that there is a broadband myth, that there have been many assumptions that have proved to be false in the past. So with that, I'd like to pass the cord to Fletcher Brown, and thank you very much for your time today.
Hold on, Frank.
Yes, sir.
A couple of questions. It sounds like your organization, working along with Carl Rose, you're on the cusp of really getting some more electronic delivery systems into the state of Alaska. Can you give us a cost delivery system as compared to, well, I guess that was one question, if you could comment on that. And another question is, what is the cost difference between a book and an electronic book, a paper book and a published book and an electronic book, so we can look at actual numbers of what is this cost going
to
be?
Well, Fletcher Brown is prepared to discuss the economics. There are dramatic cost savings due directly to some of the very latest technological advances.
Representative Gowdy?
Now, you used the word self-actualization.
Yes.
I'm pretty familiar with that term. Are you using it in the same context?
As Abraham Maslow?
Yes.
I most certainly am.
Okay. Now, with Maslow, hierarchical needs, that puts it at the very top. That's where you've already been fairly successful in your life and are looking for one more step, and yet you're using it in the context of kids in a village.
Constructivist learners that take charge of their own learning are what we're shooting for in education. The internet gives us all the opportunity to individualize our own learning path, to be able to find specific information within seconds of having the need. This dynamic, I think, has everything to do with the general theme of self-actualization. And for the first time in human history, we have the opportunity to bring this to all learners. Now, in rural villages, we don't have the equivalent of fiber optic broadband. But as Fletcher will detail in just a moment, we do have some extremely powerful opportunities. My background is psychology, and I'm very much focused on the issue that the problems we're having in education with both teachers and students is one of motivation and relevance in their view. And that as a self-actualized learner myself, I have learned to use the internet to be extremely powerful as a self-directed learner and a global self-publisher as these e-commerce curriculum on the table to test. So I am both a teacher educator as well as an instructional entrepreneur, as well as leading in state-of-the-art rural e-commerce instruction, all as a single individual, but because I've been able to use this tool to keep myself motivated, but also to be in a position to teach others on a worldwide basis.
That was quite an answer. Representative Gatto?
Yeah, that was quite an answer. I'm hardest on the people that are presenting information that I sort of agree with and usually try to find the tougher questions. Now, we had something 20 years ago called program learning. We put it in the schools. It had a very quick improvement in learning followed by a drastic decline until we finally decided that kids don't do well without a teacher. doesn't matter what you give them that's interesting, entertaining, and exciting, they give up shortly. How is this different from programmed learning?
Teachers are more important in the learning process than they've ever been. They are the leaders, the info brokers with a worldwide library to draw from. They are an integral part of the ILP process, individualizing instruction, keeping students on track. There's more online collaboration and teacher-student interaction that takes place in the online environment than generally takes place in the physical classroom. And so what we're looking at is not either or, but bringing to our students the very best of both the online and the traditional classroom.
Representative Lynn?
I would follow.
The only thing I could say, you know, I use the internet extensively in my work here and in my personal work. It hardly a day goes by that I don't explore the internet. Some issue I'm concerned about, some bill I'm concerned about, something I have to talk about, I go to the internet just automatically.
Right. Our challenge is to bring the very best capabilities to people as soon as possible, and Fletcher Brown will address that directly.
Don't leave yet.
Just a second here. Frank, just try and keep your answers a little shorter here.
You're trying to escape. We talked about the value of a teacher. Is there a difference between a teacher and a mom? Is it nurturing to be there for kids as they use the digital experience, or does it have to be a teacher who is, well, I guess you know where I'm going with this.
Well, a teacher's first role, in my view, needs to be teaching the love of learning. And that actually is the same role for a mother. Most of my teachers are mothers. And I have many mothers that are very much involved with homeschooling as well.
I hope you mean our fathers, too.
Or fathers, yes, certainly.
Representative Guerra?
Are you finished? I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just trying to get my arms around whether or not there's something we can do this session to promote this, or whether we're just going to hear it and do nothing with it. So I understand Mr. Rose's proposal, and I understand that there's an effort to get that into the budget. Is my understanding correct that what you're talking about are services that would then be available if we had the infrastructure that Mr. Rose helped us get funding for, but currently there's nothing in the budget and there's no proposal that relates to the services that you're talking about?
Maybe I can speak to that.
Sure.
This is Carrie Boyd for the record. Carrie, please step up. Tell you what, Frank, you could step down. Carrie, answer this question, then we'll get on to Fletcher.
Thank you. Our project,
Carrie Boyd.
Our project is complementing of what Carl Rose has.
Sure.
We have also asked for money from the legislature for $2 million, but it's to complement what is already in place with Carl Rose's initiative, and what Fletcher is getting ready to talk about is the technology infrastructure that we will be using for both projects for the delivery.
And your proposal, is that in a budget? Is that in any of the budgets that we're considering right now?
No, it's not.
Okay. And I'm just trying to get a sense. There's no bill that proposes it as a just your organization is pushing it right now.
Yes. We're here for. We're looking for support for our initiative. Is what we're looking for.
Yeah, we were just approached on this just within the last month or so.
We've been here presenting for the past few months. About once a month we present, trying to get the message across of what we're trying to do. We sincerely believe in our efforts and that we can make a difference. And with our different presentations, we discovered that Carl Rose had an initiative in place as well. So we've been meeting with Carl, and we both agree that one complements the other.
Thank you.
Thanks. And I don't want you to get me wrong. I mean, if there's a proposal that has merit, I think we should do something about it and push it forward. I'm just trying to get a sense whether or not there's anybody pushing this forward, or whether this is a presentation that we're going to hear today and then you're going to disappear and that nobody's going to pick up with. So I'm trying to get a sense whether there's any momentum for it.
Well, we're hoping that we do have some momentum, and we're hoping to gain your support to help us is what we're looking for.
Okay, Fletcher?
Thank you.
Well, I'm Fletcher Brown, representing DRS Tampsco. I'd like to start out by just having, if you can, picture a vision for a minute, and that would be a vision of every rural village in Alaska, some 235-plus urban areas, all being connected in some type of a network that would allow content, whether it be voice, text, video, rich media, whatever, to be moved at a cost-effective manner to each of those locations. Part of the vision includes that at the hub of each village there would be a box, and that box would serve as the primary point from which data would be extracted. The process by which you do that I'll cover here in a little bit, but what we're looking at is something which is called content delivery networking, and determining where content is, who needs it, and how to get it there most cost effectively. The most cost-effective way to do it is certainly not the traditional communications pipes that are in place to rural Alaska now, which is satellite broadband. So a little bit before we get to there about the company that I work for. We've been in business since 1982, started by two gentlemen in their kitchen as a small minority business. We have grown to $330 million a year, all primarily in high technology. We have 15 locations in the U.S., and we have about 8 offices in various foreign countries, primarily remote and rural areas. Yes, sir.
Yeah, just so I can also get my arms around what you're proposing. You're clearing the hurdle of sort of slow internet access and slow internet downloads that we have around the state. So you're talking about putting a data system within each community that people can tap in much and get the data much more quickly. And I take it that you would therefore have the educational information in every community, and you would then have educational staff trained to extract it for the students? Do I have this correct?
You've got it for the education part. But yet what we really want to do is address the whole healthy village concept, to be able to have meaningful content distributed in all the areas of safety, health, education, economic development, culture, social services, legislative or government issues, and entertainment, healthy entertainment. All those things require the same type of delivery context. Why shouldn't Alaskans wake up every morning to have the electronic version of the daily, the Anchorage newspaper on their doorstep, along with a whole host of educational programs, health information, and all the other various things that form the healthy village? I've learned from colleagues that I've worked with primarily through Alaska Worldwide that I've been introduced to, that it's the healthy village which makes it happen. You can't just focus on one component like health or education or economic development, but it requires a combination of all those things to address the healthy village, which would then allow both individuals and the village itself to prosper and grow. So in following on from that, our company has, and me particularly, since 1993 been involved in rural economic development and have brought about $750 million worth of business to remote areas. Our company's primary mission is delivering global communication solutions worldwide, and we have operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, Macedonia, a variety of different places. We have both small transportable equipment, transportable by truck, and here you see 32-foot trailers that are full of equipment that can provide everything from soup to nuts in terms of rapid rural communications. On the Alaska front, our first major project here was the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. We were selected as a vendor and have recently installed a satellite hub connecting 37 remote villages via satellite and 11 by microwave into Bethel for purposes of telemedicine, video conferencing, and so forth. This is part of the hub that has been erected there now and is in full operation. That's what it looks like sitting outside the hospital. We've worked in many of the villages under very difficult circumstances, primarily using village people where possible to assist in the development. We're currently now implementing the largest voice over IP system in Alaska. It'll be a private phone system for the entire Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. These boxes are being deployed starting next week. Okay, what I really want to talk about is this thing called the broadband myth, and it is a myth. If you talk to somebody, oh, every village in Alaska has broadband, and that is true to some extent until you really try to tax it and use it. And it's a difficult thing. It's a very technical thing and difficult to communicate, but I will try my best to show why there is a myth of broadband. And if you really start taxing it by trying to send rich multimedia presentations, i.e. live lectures combining video, desktop,
blackboard, document cameras, real teaching and learning information as opposed to a talking head, the system starts to break down because it itself consumes so much bandwidth that there's very little left over for anything else. So there are things that we can do about this. We can't cure the problem 100%, but we can get about an 80% correction on that. First of all, old communications are what's called circuit-based, and it's kind of like a wire going from one location to another. Very inefficient in terms of bandwidth utilization, because once that circuit's there, it's consuming bandwidth where it's required or not. The world has moved to the convergence of IP, Internet or IP protocol, much more efficient and be able to share resources between various entities at the same time, and it can be shared in terms of thousandths of a second. But the problem, so if you have multiple people in a village with one increment of bandwidth, and people are doing their email and they're typing and they're doing a little web surfing and that type of thing, that bandwidth can appear to serve all of them very, very well because it can be shared. Once that village starts to say, okay, now let's really tax the system. Let's get a health lecture to a health aide. Let's have a math teacher send an outstanding lecture on how to compute the hypotenuse of a triangle. Let's do those types of things to get rich media, high quality, DVD quality stuff that keeps students awake. You consume all the bandwidth, probably plus more, that's available to the village, and we find out there's no longer any sharing available, and things fall down. But there are some things that we can do about that. Just buying more bandwidth is absolutely and positively not the answer. You can't do it. There isn't enough bandwidth on all the satellites available that have a footprint in Alaska to do all the things that needs to be done. You have to become more effective at sharing the resources that can be afforded. Let's take a typical example. Everybody's heard of a T1. Doesn't matter what it is, but people buy them out there all the time. It's generally a shared T1. Just to buy the raw radio spectrum off of a satellite wholesale costs anywhere between $2,500 and $6,000 for something called a megahertz. Guess what? You need three of those megahertz to get one bidirectional T1. So you're looking at, just to buy radio spectrum, does not include the equipment in the village, the hub, the people, the maintenance, or any of that, you're looking at somewhere between $7,500 and $18,000 a month per T1, basic bottom raw cost. It's not going to work. The only way that works is to start sharing that infrastructure, and it is shared up to the point when you start consuming it all. You will start consuming it when you want to transmit live, rich media to students. So what's an answer? There's a variety of different factors here. I'll address two or three of them. Number one, have very effective methods of being able to take video input, computer desktop, blackboard, document camera, other, combining it into one thing, compressing it, and forming a very effective stream called an MPEG-4 H.264 data stream. You can then send that stream out, and instead of sending it like video conferencing does, if you have 12 people in video conference, each one of those people consumes the identical amount of bandwidth. If you want to send a 256K video conference, you got 256K. There's another one over here, another one to the chairman, another one over here. Pretty soon, you have no bandwidth left, so you start lowering the amount of bandwidth to each user, which lowers the quality. Don't need to do that. By using something called multicast, we can take a very rich media content, move it to the satellite, and multicast it. Multicast means one data stream, and you have as many people as you want within the footprint of the satellite, which is basically North America, be able to receive that and get very high quality receipt of information. Even better is, what if the people aren't there to watch it? Send it out, and along with that stream, send the menuing information and have it stick in the village in a box and have it menued by safety, health, education, economic development, and so forth, with depth of menu for people to go in and look at things on their own or review recurrent training. That's the basic concept. Another thing that we can do is use collaboration servers, terminal servers, and digital video broadcast with embedded IP in it to multiply the effectiveness of bandwidth. The last thing is using content management. That means having rich content, moving it out to the village, caching it in the village, and allowing residences, schools, businesses, tribal admin, governance, health, whatever, to access that media. If you have an excellent piece of health information, broadcast it to 200 villages simultaneously and have it stick out there, and you never need to go back across the satellite network again. That frees up the satellite network to do other things which can't be cached. Okay, what's content? Voice, video, text, and data. some examples, audio discussions, interactive training, forms, books, course material, entire websites all the way down to 100 pages or more, and combinations of all of the above. I propose that there needs to be a content management center for each of these eight primary areas that constitute a healthy village. And it could be a point of long and laborious discussion to decide who would actually manage that content center. Let's throw health out there. How about ANTHC, who can decide what health information is generally required by people in the villages? They become the virtual center for management. Information comes in, they manage it, it goes into a content management system, goes up to the satellite, uses the bandwidth on off hours. By the way, all this bandwidth that's being paid for out there is squandered when nobody's using it. The periods when it's not being used, there's a way to go get it, aggregate it, tell the satellite systems out there now, open up your window and allow very large data streams to come in, data streams you could not afford during the day, and then use maybe 10 megabits, 100 megabits per second, and broadcast that information to 200 places at once. When you do that, you multiply the effectiveness of the bandwidth you're already paying for by factors of several thousand.
So just, I guess that's kind of a long way around of saying that the technology that we have in place today, we can start using now?
The technology that's being used today has generally been circuit-based. It is moving to packet-based in Alaska, but it's moving to packet-based on individual connections for people. I'm saying you can aggregate that and send that out. How does that tie into what the folks have been talking about today? We set up an architecture that allows you to move data from a central location or multiple locations, i.e. Juneau, Anchorage, anywhere where you have an educator or a remote educator, into the hub, send it up, multicast it out to as many villages as you deem necessary, along with menuing information for live lectures with return channel, and then caching for future reference. The last thing I'm going to say here is that one of the problems that I have seen, and I do this around the world, is that people often ask for, in terms of what they go out and contract for, they ask for bandwidth. I would like to contract for so much bandwidth. I'm trying to get people to move away from that concept and say, no, I want to contract for a function. Here's what I need to achieve. I need to achieve the following things. Let industry put their thinking cap on and come back and say, here's how we can do that more cost effectively. There is an impetus to sell bandwidth because bandwidth generates revenue and revenue generates profit. And in fact, there are sometimes much more cost-effective ways to accomplish the same objective. I'm going to summarize for our group here now, and then I think we're done. First of all, we've heard that education, that native youth, particularly in the remote villages, are at risk in Alaska. We've heard that the IOP process, which I would highly encourage you to look into in more detail, I have been thoroughly impressed by what I have seen in the concepts, which have now been built into software and are readily demonstrable, to take all the state standards, develop an individual learning plan for each student, get that student to contract with the teacher and with the parent, form that nucleus contract, and then be able to track them to it. And I love the concept they have is there is no failure. Your grade on every single one of those many hundreds of elements within the state standardized testings are A, B, or not yet. Not yet means you need to continue to work on that one. And that one never goes away until it has been met by the student. So students don't get out of eighth grade with only knowing 60 or 70% of the information and move into the next grade and lose it. It's still there, and it's not going to go away until you've checked off the box. And by the way, if you're doing pretty good, why don't you start working 2 years ahead? And so it's a very effective process. I do know that it's been done other places with the burden of the paperwork, and the software reduces with an objective of eliminating the paperwork and tracking all this. The second part is a rural economic development. I've known Frank for 4 or 5 years. Frank is a guy who I say will normally feed you the fire hose. It's hard for the guy who's done a great job today in trying to summarize it down. But the concepts that are out there in the world for rural economic development need to be taught, and you need teachers to teach them, and the teachers might not be in the village. But the teachers might be in places like Frank and other locations who can then use the content delivery system to broadcast live and recurrent training out to these areas there, using the ILP processes to enhance learning. So economic development gets built into the curriculum, and kids start learning that in kindergarten, so they develop a lifelong thirst for that. Finally, do all of this without having to affect the native culture. Preservation of native culture, way of life or whatnot means that maybe we need to adjust the way the school works and the delivery methods to accommodate the social perspectives in the village. And finally, content delivery networking, which is an effective method that can move, cannot satisfy all objectives, but for those eight primary areas can move information out to villages and make it recurrently available. We do have a five-phase plan there. This is for the fifth phase would be well beyond this, which is total success story in rural Alaska and then move into other areas of the country, primarily Native American reservations that I do a lot of work with, who suffer the same social, economic, and educational problems as do rural Native Alaskans. And I thank you very much. We have a few minutes maybe for questions.
Representative Gatto?
I could see we have seven members on this committee. They're not all here. But if let's say the seven come from all over the state and it's interim and we want to have a meeting, the best way to do it is in real time, which means we'll need a satellite. But when we talk about teaching a kid how to calculate the hypotenuse of a triangle, that shouldn't be in real time. My guess is, couldn't that be on a server somewhere? You access the server, you bring in the thing. Now, when you have questions, maybe then you need, so you have to integrate both of these. Is that the direction you were going?
Absolutely. But it's really kind of a combination. It's not limiting yourself to either live or stored content, but have the ability to do a variety of things. So any live lecture which is sent out needs to be cached and cached with a menu so that people can go back and review it. If the child wasn't there during that particular lecture, they go back and do it. The system also has a capability of, let's say you have a teacher in location X, and they have generally proven to be very, very effective, for whatever reason, at communicating certain concepts to children in rural villages. And you can have two people with the same knowledge, one of them having the ability to really communicate that knowledge to someone else, and the other one being able to retain it. When you find those types of things that are really good content, they should be captured, distributed, and made accessible to teachers, students, and whatnot in the villages. So it's a combination of both live and cached content. You asked a question before about textbooks and whatnot, and I think a study that's been done has shown that the best textbook found only maybe accommodates 65-70% of the information that might be in the state standards. So that means you need a variety of pieces of content to cover all those, and there's no one book that is excellent. I would like to see down the road things progress to where, through the individual learning plan, you get feedback from the students themselves where they tell you, wow, this piece of content was really effective for me. It turned on the lights. And if you do that enough times, you start to get a database of what's effective, what's not effective, and that effective stuff needs to be moved out and cached in every village and made available to the students, to the parents for homeschooling, and to the teachers for traditional classroom work.
Representative Lynn?
This has been a very fascinating presentation overall, and excellent concepts here. But I'm wondering, if this is so good for the villages, and it may be, what about the urban areas? Why couldn't this work there just as well? And what about homeschoolers throughout the country who may not have access to all the, the various different disciplines?
Okay.
Could this not be expanded?
And then, absolutely.
And then it's kind of an aside. We do have a problem here, with rural school districts are very, very expensive to operate, mm-hmm. for obvious reasons. This might help consolidate some of those districts.
Yes. Actually, I apologize for excluding the urban areas and those who are more traditionally connected by high-speed communications. I was really focusing on those that are really the problem areas, which are out in those remote areas. However, the concept is exactly the same. The same information, with no more money, by the way. Once it's broadcast or multicast, it doesn't matter whether it's going to 10 sites or 1,000 sites. The cost is the same. You just need the box at the other end to receive it and decode it. This is the box to decode it. Any laptop PC can decode the information and prevent very high-quality digital video. I have examples of it on my laptop here. There are other ways also to do that, and you might want to explore the concept that the state right now has resources in villages. They have the state-owned and PBS-operated television, and that's called Digital Video Broadcast, DVB. And there is another component of this that says you can take DVB, which is generally video, and now you can embed IP or data traffic in it and use those same resources that are existing to be able to broadcast information out to villages, cache it, and make it locally available.
And then if I just, then on availability to homeschoolers, how would that work?
Exactly the same way. Once content has been delivered to a village, it sits there in a cache, and that cache should be available through primarily a wireless network in the village to residences, businesses, schools, libraries, tribal admin, health clinics, all the various aspects of doing
that. Throughout the state, throughout the nation.
Okay.
Anywhere where you have that box to receive the information.
Fletcher, there's
yes, sir.
A lot of questions. This is some great information. I'm going to ask the presenters of this slideshows that we've had today to please present a copy of this to each member of this committee. They're going to have more questions for you. Make yourself present, accessible to them. Make sure that they have your numbers. We do want to hear a little bit about an introduction on HB 228 also today. We're getting short. We got 10 minutes to do that. We were going to be holding that bill. So thank you, Fletcher, for your presentation.
Yes, sir.
And all the folks from this very, very informative type of delivery system, and I know that I've worked quite a bit this year. It's been my focus to try and get some of this types of programs to this committee, so we can start working on this. This in response to Representative Guerra's question earlier, it's just the introduction, and hopefully we'll be able to move forward on this and continue on these.
Yes, sir.
With these
Thank
discussions.
You very much.
Thank you, Fletcher. Real quick, Gary.
I just want to thank you again for your time and allowing us to present. And if you do need any expanding on some of the concepts we proposed today, we can gladly furnish those. And we didn't get a chance to talk about some of the best practices and methodologies that we would use to get to the point where we would have the healthy village, but we have that information. And I do want to just clarify, as far as our funding request, we did submit it to Senator Wilkins for $2 million.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you,
folks.
Thank you.
At this time, we want to hear from Representative Holm and Barbara Cotting. They're going to present to us a brief introduction to HB 228. We're not going to be able to hear the whole bill today, but Representative Holm has been trying to get ready for this. He finally just received the information that he's been waiting for, so he asked that, if we could get a chance to hear some of that. And certainly we try and grant that. Representative Holm.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. We'll be with you here in a second here. Clean up all the...
We can
like
clear out
a gadget
the technology out of there.
They won't take it.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Holm, and today I'd like to present to you and the committee HB 228. As you may recall, Mr. Chairman, we discussed this bill at great length over the last 3 or 4 months, and we've been trying to figure out some methodology that could kind of change the way we think somewhat about how we're educating our children in the state of Alaska. You know, this bill kind of started with a lot of conversations with my wife and at midnight, and sometimes in tears, and a whole number of scenarios that were certainly very disturbing to me as a parent, as a grandparent, and of course as a former student in a state of Alaska. It's my opinion, having been here 60 years and having grown up in Alaska, that our education system is not satisfying the needs of the Alaskan youth. It's not because we don't want to. It's not because we don't put the money into. I think it's structurally unsound the way we're trying to provide these services. And one of the issues that I chose to take on, and I've been looking at this for several years, is PTR, and we call it pupil-teacher ratio, in the lower grades. And the reason for that is we all know that there's some basics. When a child comes from the womb, a child cannot speak, cannot read, cannot write, cannot do anything. And so they have some certain basic needs and talents that they need to provide or be provided with so they can become successful. We also know over many, many years, and I believe we know, that children who do not read well by the third grade are bound for, if not failure, at least for a lack of success, like we would like our children to succeed. If they can't perform perfunctory mathematical talent, you know, equations and things, they have a much more difficult time. If they can't read appropriately, reading is an absolutely important, as we know here, we read how many hours a day? I mean, all of us read. That's all we do is read. We read and listen, and we read and we read some more. And the idea that we don't have children that have adequate reading capabilities is just appalling to me. Though we have computers in classrooms, a computer spell check cannot tell the difference between read and read and read. It cannot spell the, it cannot think for us. We need to have children that can think for themselves. And so to give them those talents and abilities, I propose House Bill 228. 228 would do four things. Well, three things. One, it takes away from the teacher the inability to control a classroom vis-a-vis the size. If you'll notice, Mr. Chairman, through in the data that I've received, and I haven't had time to spend a lot of time on it, but we're gonna spend more time looking at it. But if you look at the Matt Sue just gave us one today, you'll see that the kindergarten average ratios are 20 to 1, first grade 21 to 1, second grade 22 to 1, and of course third grade 26 to 1. Now, I don't know about you, Mr. Chairman, but 26 9-year-olds in a classroom are, if not unmanageable, certainly relatively unteachable, unless you have some tremendous discipline. Anchorage has, we can just go through them all, but they're pretty interesting. They all are in excess of 20 children per classroom. And speaking with my wife over the past 15 years about education issues, it's always been a case that if we want to raise the bar, you have to get rid of the discipline problems. The discipline problems in the class are directed all the attention because they have to take care of them, so you let your more appropriate acting students work on their own. They don't work with the assistance of a teacher because the teacher is spending all their time trying to babysit the ones that are problematic. Now, I'm sure that's more a problem in the later years because they don't, in the younger years, have enough attention and they don't learn the rules the way they should learn them. Discipline, of course, is a parental thing. And today, with a lot of single parents, we have a lot of problems with parents putting the teacher in between two parents. And those issues are better dealt with if you have less of those to deal with. Having the time to spend with the parents during parent-teacher conferences so that she can get, or that he can get the parents together, so each parent has an opportunity to get on the same sheet of music, so that they're actually working for their children's education rather than taking time to compete. And a lot of times they'll compete with one another, or they'll compete for the ability to educate their children. I mean, there's a lot of things that are really very unfortunate that happen in the classroom, but in a smaller number, it's much more manageable. In Fairbanks, we have what they call a flex system that they've been using. My wife taught kindergarten for a long time, and the flex system, what it did is it actually gives 3 hours in the morning. I think it's 3 hours in the morning. I may get this wrong, but I'll give you the idea. If it's a four-hour day for the kindergarten, they have 3 hours, then they have 1 hour that two classes come together, and then 3 hours for the next class. So you'll have one area where you'll have maybe 30 or 40 students, but they'll be doing things like music or something that isn't a real heavy teaching portion. But then on the other ones, they'll have 20 or less. They'll have 14, 13. I think in our flex in Fairbanks, it was like 14 or 13 in most cases on each class, and then they just come together for lunchtime or recess or gym or something when you can manage the children a little bit better. So those kinds of things, I think, are beneficial for having smaller class sizes. So I think it's a, you know, how many times have we heard it's a simple bill, and yet it's not a simple problem. But I think it's a problem that actually can be handled with mathematics, and it can actually be handled with numbers. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I would answer any questions I could.
Thank you, Representative Holm. Earlier, Representative Croft proposed the same idea to us in his committee, gave us lots of good information about how good this would work as far as educating students. The crux of his plan, when asked, how much is this going to cost? Is this going to be another unfunded mandate to the school districts? His was more of a voluntary type program into this program with some additional state funds. Could you give us a little bit of an idea how maybe this compares alongside a Representative Cross bill, or what am I going to tell school districts when they ask me, is this going to be an unfunded mandate from the state? How do we approach that?
Maybe the answer, or maybe I would tell them, we won't let you not do it. That we know, I mean, I believe this in my heart, that this is a singular causation of poor performance. If we don't address that, I mean, if we need to take people out of administration to put them in classrooms, put teachers in places where teachers ought to be teaching, and maybe not do some of the things that we do, I think it's more important to build those foundations for those young children of Alaska. That's what I would tell them, regardless of what it costs them to do so. I mean, if you need to tax yourself a little more, or if we need to put a little more in for the state, you know as well as I do, we've added 30%, 35% over the last 4 years. So the state, we keep adding money, ratcheting money up into the system, but is it getting on the floor? Is it getting where we need to put the money for those teachers? I don't know. I mean, each district has to make those decisions for themselves. But by us setting standards, I mean, that's why we have a state policy. This is statewide policy. This isn't about how you manipulate within your district. I don't care how you do it. I don't think I need to be interested in how the city of Fairbanks does it in terms of how they apply the number of teachers that they have. What I need to be concerned with, and I think what we all need to be concerned with, is if we have to have No Child Left Behind, we have to perform to that. We need to raise the children's abilities. And to raise their abilities, I think smaller class sizes are absolutely imperative.
A huge concern that I've heard is, what if we have 23 students? Do we have to have another teacher, another classroom? And then we'll get to Representative Garrett's got a question.
Well, I don't know. You know, it's like pick a number. I suppose I don't know that there's an answer to that. I mean, if you would say that if you had two teachers, would you have a better deal if you had shifts, or if you had two teachers and there's 12 and 11? You know, you have to make that choice as a district to come within those lines. But I think if we don't set lines low enough, I think Representative Cross was 18, was it not?
15.
15? Believe me, I'm setting this higher than I would like, because of the ramifications of the financial costs. But I think if we demand that our children are going to be educated and have the opportunities to be successful, we've got to get them when they're young. You get them when they're 9 or 10 years old, they're done.
Representative Gere?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks, Representative Holm. I think one of these days this idea is going to catch on. I had a bill to do it. Representative Kurtula has a bill every year to do it. Representative Croft has a bill to do it, and you've got a bill to do it. And one of these days we're going to start making sense to people for all the reasons you just mentioned. Let me just offer something to you, and you know, maybe we can sort of all join in our proposals to reduce class sizes. The materials that you supplied us, and I know you would like to see smaller class sizes. I sort of promised when I got elected that I would try not to spend money on things that don't make a difference. And I think when I started my sort of work on small class sizes, my proposals looked very similar to yours. But the studies show, and some of the materials in your packet show, that class sizes of 20 still don't really make a difference. One of the quotes from one of the materials in here is, but it's fairly clear the class size must get somewhere below 20 in order to make a real difference. And so I always liken it when I give talks on small class size to, you've got a conference in Colorado. A plane ticket to Colorado costs $500. You save $100 and you get off in Seattle. you spent $400 and it doesn't do you any good. So let's spend the extra $100.
Well, I can just, if I can respond, Mr. Chairman, not to debate with you,
sure.
but just to offer to you that I would agree with you. Obviously, one-to-one is the best solution.
Sure.
Since that isn't an option, and since 25-to-1 is outrageous, and it's in many cases it's much greater. Remember, these are just averages. These aren't
sure.
These aren't where the rubber meets the road. Some of the class sizes are close to 30 in first and second grade, and I think it makes a difference whether you're in third grade or in second grade or in first grade or in kindergarten. You know, as you move up, you might be able to ratchet up, and,
sure.
and this is certainly an evolutionary process, as you well know. But I would like to see that we would have the dialogue and we would say, you know, this is something we could fix. This is something we legislatively can set in policy, because by leaving it up to the districts, they're going to deal with the bucks. They're going to deal with, you know, it's like No Child Left Behind. Whether we like it or don't like it, one of the good things about it is it sets standards. It says you got to meet these standards.
Sure.
Because it's what we expect of you for all the money we put in.
Let me finish, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
And I don't disagree with what you just said. It's just that, and then one of the other quotes from one of the materials in there is merely reducing class size from 25 down to 20 is an ineffective form of implementation. What I'm saying is, and I'm going to offer an amendment on the bill. I want to, before we spend the money, I want to spend the money on something that is really going to make a big difference in our schools. And I think kindergarten through third grade, the studies show you reduce class sizes to 17 and smaller. All of a sudden, you've made a big difference. You spend the money just to get down to 25, and it's like buying the plane ticket to Seattle. So I'm hoping that maybe you'll consider doing a sponsor substitute, or I'll offer an amendment to reduce it down to 17. It's going to cost money. I mean, you and I have to admit that. But you're right. Just spending the money the way we've been spending it to have class sizes of 26 kids is. I guess Representative Berkowitz says if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again without results, it's the definition of insanity. And we've got to do something better.
A different result, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman, through the chair. I appreciate that, Representative Guerra. I'm not casting stone on what the number is, and I know it was at the upper limit of the number, and people would say, you know, it really doesn't affect. I think it has more effect at 9-year-olds than it does in kindergarten. Probably a kindergarten 14 is probably a better number in a lot of cases. So, you know, as they get some skills, as they learn how to stand in line, as they learn not to pull each other's hair and throw things at each other and do different things, they become more teachable. And of course, obviously, that's what we want them to learn their social skills as they go through. So I appreciate that very much, and I have no problem with the numbers particularly.
We'll form the small class size caucus.
There you go.
Well, hopefully you two representatives can get together and produce another CS for this. On that note, though, just for the time restraints that we do have to make sure the other members need to get to their committees prior stuff that they've got to get to, and this room needs to get used again. Representative Holm, we're going to hold this over, and hopefully we'll be able to come back to it depending on the schedule that we get from our leadership of where we're going to be on the floor. So at that time, we will call this meeting to an end.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for hearing the bill.
I guess I should have said this is probably the most important piece of legislation we've got down here. In the long run, maybe more important than...